In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Alan Adams from The Main Edge joining us right here in studio. Hello, Al.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. We were just chatting in the break there about the crazy finish to our rotisserie baseball season, the Bagward Drum Slowly League. We had a four-team race going into the final weekend.
Yeah, no, it was hot, and like it felt like there was significant like shuffling at the top, like pretty much every day.
Oh, it was crazy, like game by game. But Jim Walsh, his Harvey Walsh Bangers, ended up winning just barely over Mardi Gras and the Mardi Gras. Your Allen's Coffee Brandies finished a very close third, just ahead of John Cox. Can I say his team name?
I think you probably.
The Cox Sackers. Sackers, like baseball.
Very, very, very important. Enunciation is very important.
But it was fun. It was
great.
Yeah,
no, it was super great. And, you know, it's one of those things where I felt pretty good about my team. We had some doldrums in the dog days, as often happens. But everybody sort of bounced back. Really strong pitching staff. Hopefully the hitting's a little bit better next year. And well, I can take a shot at the top spot.
I mean, you still got a pretty good group coming back next year.
It's true.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Did you get to hear any of our conversation with Joe Posnanski?
Every word of it, man.
He's great.
Every word. God. And it's just like, and that book is so good. And I think you, in the conversation, you really captured it. Like, I think what he's so good at is sort of bringing together the two approaches to baseball writing. He's very adept on the analytical side, but he also has a real appreciation for the legends of the game, the stories. And when you can sort of combine data and myth like that, like you're going to get great work. And every single one of these essays brings that kind of energy. Like if you like baseball at all, I cannot stress enough, you should really read this book.
And so I started reading it before I got the hardcover version, so I was reading it online. I had no idea it was 880 pages, and then I got the book in the mail. I went, holy cow, but it didn't feel like that at all.
It doesn't read long, you know what I mean? And it's just, and that's really, really hard to do. But yeah, just like sitting there, and like you, I read almost all of them. The versions of these essays that first appeared on The Athletic last year. It was actually a primary reason why I re-upped my subscription to The Athletic was because I'm like, well, I can't not finish this. So it's great. Like, and for what it's worth, I think I'm in agreement with Joe on his number one.
Again,
we won't spoil it, but again, I think that's where I come down as well. Really, I think his top 10 is pretty much there. You know, I might move some stuff around. And again, like, and we talked about this when we talked about the book last week, but you know, he definitely took some liberties with some numbering, just for the,
that was the beauty of it.
For the sake of the story. And that's like, you know, and someone who understands that importance, you know, you can't help but love it when they write about a sport like baseball.
Yeah, it was great. All right, we've got a lot of movies to get to. You saw four in the last week. What should we begin with?
We could get this one out of the way real quick. So we'll as I said on Twitter, two sequels, a prequel and a remake. You know, that pretty much sums up the cinematic landscape these days.
Hooray for Hollywood.
You know, so we'll start with the remake. It's a movie called The Guilty, currently screening on Netflix. It's a remake of a 2018 Danish film of the same name that was long listed for Best Foreign Language Feature at the Academy Awards. It stars Jake Gyllenhaal, directed by Antoine Fuqua, and written by, and I always get his name wrong, Nick Pazzoletto, the True Detective guy. I always screw his name up, but so wonderful creative team on this, and it's an okay movie. It's one of those movies that has self-imposed limits on it due to the nature of the narrative. It's set in a 911 dispatch call center, and that's where we stay. And so it's a lot of time spent with our main character, played by Jake Gyllenhaal. He's a guy named Joe Baylor. He's an LAPD officer who has been sort of consigned to desk duty for reasons that are not at all clear as we begin and slowly start to unspool as the movie progresses. He's clearly not happy to be there. He clearly has very little respect for what he is doing and the people with whom he is doing it. But that all that starts to shift when he winds up on a call with a woman who has been abducted. And so he starts trying to talk her through the experience while also reaching out to various and sundry arms of law enforcement to try to get their help in tracking this woman down. It all kind of plays out that way. And 95% of the movie takes place we're at a desk with computer screens and a headset, and it's him talking to people on the phone. There are a couple of flashes where they get us out of that space in sort of like real-time / imagined kind of moments, but they're very quick and they're very infrequent. And it's mostly just, tight on Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, that's what we're watching for, an hour and a half. Those are the sorts of movies that can go off the rails very easily. That's a very difficult trick to pull off, to make something that's not, frankly, it's boring. Like, it's just, like, there's an inherent sort of sedentary vibe to movies like this. And you have to find a way to inject a sort of kinetic feel into it. And luckily, when you've got someone like Jake Gyllenhaal, who's a very talented actor, who also is gifted with a particularly expressive face, his features are very distinct, and so he's able to sort of convey a lot through his eyes, and his vocal intonations are very strong. And we just watch him as he sort of fights through the tries to cut through bureaucratic red tape, ends up talking to an old sergeant of his, ends up talking to his former partner, where we start to learn a little bit more about why he's on this desk and why he's apparently going to appear in court tomorrow for reasons that are never specifically laid out until the very end. It's pretty compelling. Like, it's not as necessarily the most exciting movie you're going to watch. But Gyllenhaal, it's a great performance from him. It's a wonderful showcase for what he can do. Anton Fuqua has a great knack for bringing these sorts of static situations to life. Like, you look at something like all the car stuff from Training Day, those sorts of, like, where it's just like, finding ways to build energy when nobody's really moving. So there's that. The script is solid. And it's funny because there are actually some pretty notable names on the list as far as people he speaks to on the phone. He talks to the woman he talks to, played by Riley Keough, his old sergeant, played by Ethan Hawke. Like, at one point, an angry nightclub patron that he rudely dismisses, Bill Burr. Like, it's just this wonderful collection.
So it's like Frasier.
Yeah, a little bit, actually. Like, that's actually a really good analogy for it. But yeah, it's, again, like, it's not an action-packed kind of movie. But if you're looking for, like, a low-key kind of character study with a pretty intense energy, The Guilty. Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
All right, Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Downtown. What's up next?
I guess from there we'll go to the prequel, the Many Saints of Newark,
which I'm hoping it's good, but I don't know.
All right, so some things we don't need to do some things, like some things, like,
yeah,
look, I mean, The Sopranos redefined the possibilities of television drama. Like, I don't think there's any disputing that. I think it's still among the best television shows ever made. And six seasons of that, you can really dig into some stuff and you can really build a world. And it's a very strong and self-contained world, one that is very well defined, both by what is in it and what is not. So did we really need a prequel? And the answer, I'm afraid, is no. Like, I mean, and it's crazy because a lot of the people, like, behind the scenes involved in the creation of The Sopranos are involved in this project.
Yeah.
David Chase, who created the series, he co-wrote the script alongside Lawrence Connor, who also wrote a number of Sopranos scripts. The director is Alan Taylor, who directed some of the most memorable episodes of The Sopranos. These are people who understand that world. The problem is, this isn't that world. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where they're trying very hard to sort of, I don't know, retcon, you know, Tony Soprano. Like they're but the thing about it is, like, you've I don't know how much you've read about it or seen about the movie, but you would think that this is a Tony Soprano origin story. Like that's kind of how it's being presented.
Right.
It's not. I mean, that aspect of it is part of the story that's being told, but in reality, it's primarily the story of a character named Dickie Moltisanti, who we've never met before.
Hmm.
Played by a guy, Alessandro Nivola. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything before. He's quite good, but it's we're in late 60s Newark, and
Moltisanti, Italian for many saints.
And there you go. And he's a soldier in the DiMeo crime family alongside folks like Johnny Soprano, who would be Tony's dad, played by John Bernthal, and Junior Soprano, played by Corey Stahl. Like I said, I mean, this cast is stacked. Like there are some wonderful, but it's Dickie's story. It's not young Tony's story. And we walk through his journeys. Like his dad is Hollywood Dick Moltisanti, and he's played by Ray Liotta, and he comes home from Italy with a brand new young wife, and that causes problems. There's a tragic end to Hollywood Dickie, and so Dickie the younger winds up going to visit his dad's brother in prison, Sally, also played by Ray Liotta, because they're twins, and it's just this all this, and there's this entire subplot about a guy named Howard, played by Leslie Odom Jr., who sort of is Dickie's liaison in the black community in Newark, and all these things just pile up on each other. Like teenage Tony Soprano, played by Michael Gandolfini, the son of the late James Gandolfini, which it's eerie, by the way.
even in the trailer, like, whoa,
yeah,
wow,
it's eerie. But he doesn't even really show up until, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes into the film. Like we get some time with young Tony, but that sort of Michael Gandolfini that has been pushed so hard in promotion of the film is just not as big a part of it as I think I was led to believe, certainly right. As I anticipated. All this being said, it's not a bad movie. It's a well-made movie, and you've got a lot of really talented people doing really good work in it. It's just, There's an emptiness to it. I think it's because ultimately, the Sopranos didn't need a prequel. We didn't need to know where Tony Soprano came from.
Right.
I understand the impulse to tell that story, but the reality is, like, we don't need it. We don't need we don't need, because we don't even really see his beginnings down that path. It's just this sort of weird slice of life, like in his like high school years, where it's like we kind of get hints that, you know, maybe he's going down that path, and there are a couple of scenes that indicate, you know, some of the talents that he will have going forward. There's a great scene involving the woman, his mother, played by Vera Farmiga, who, again, like I said, it's just like so many incredibly talented people doing really good work, but ultimately it just falls a little short for me. Like, okay. Ultimately, like, I hate to say it, like, and it feels bad to say it, but I think it might be okay for us to go ahead and stop believing.
oh man. All right. That's your prequel. And we covered the remake. Now a couple sequels.
We got two sequels. So I'll start with, The Addams Family 2. It's fine. Like, I mean, it's, you know, for those who are familiar with the work of the cartoonist Charles Addams and his, you know, titular creation that he, you know, introduced in the pages of The New Yorker back in the late 30s, like, it's fine. Like, it's the biggest issue is the Addams Family is weird. Like, they are weird. They are off-putting. They are grotesque and macabre. And if you try to go too hard in a family-friendly direction, you lose that element. And that's the element that really makes it work. And it's a real bummer, doubly so, because I think they've done a really good job with regards to the character design. And it's like, I think they're the animated design of these characters is very reminiscent of the old Adams cartoons.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's a huge thing. Like, and I think it's an opportunity that's been missed in the past, but the story itself is just kind of meh. Like, you've got, it revolves around Wednesday, who's voiced by Chloe Grace Moretz. And she's basically struggling with, her closeness with her family. She's sort of trying to create distance between herself and her parents, Gomez, who is Oscar Isaac, and Morticia, Charlize Theron, and basically is trying to, you know, to establish some boundaries with her very strange parents. Despite her best efforts, doesn't really work out that way. We first see them as they crash into the school science fair, which Wednesday has created a project that basically allows the transfer of genetic talents between individuals. So basically, she teaches an octopus to solve a Rubik's Cube and then uses that to show how Uncle Fester can solve a Rubik's Cube. Uncle Fester, voiced by Nick Kroll, who is probably having the most fun of anybody in any of this. It's good enough to impress the scientist who's sort of sponsoring the science fair, a guy named Cyrus Strange, voiced by Bill Hader. All well and good. Wednesday still sort of upset about everything, and the Gomez solution is, well, let's get an RV and go on a cross-country road trip as a family. And so that's what we do. Okay. We load up the RV. We leave Grandmama, voiced by Bette Midler of all people, in charge of the house. And as they're getting ready to go, a lawyer shows up, voiced by Wallace Shawn, because you can't make an animated movie without having Wallace Shawn in it. And he tells Gomez and Morticia, well, you know what? There might have been a mix-up at the hospital. We're not sure that that your daughter is your daughter. Mm. And so adding a little level of intrigue. And then we're off hitting the standard sorts of tourist destinations, Niagara Falls, the Alamo, the Grand Canyon. And, you know, assorted hijinks ensue. Subplots abound. Pugsley is trying to learn how to talk to girls. Grandmama is throwing a massive house party now that everyone's away. And Uncle Fester is slowly turning into an octopus.
Okay.
As you might imagine, the aforementioned scientist sponsoring the science fair, well, he comes back.
Sure he does.
I'm not going to go into any details because, you know, there might be some people out there who don't want this spoiled for them. So... suffice to say, Dr. Cyrus Strange does make a reappearance and becomes engaged in the Addams Family story.
All right. We got to move. We only got a couple minutes left.
Oh, man.
And I don't want to miss out on Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
Man, I'll tell you what. This movie's bonkers. I love a superhero movie. Like, I'm not someone who, I grew up reading comic books. Like, I love this stuff. I don't think any of the mainstream comic book movies are quite this weird. And I mean that as a good thing, because Tom Hardy does not mess around. Like, it does not matter what he's doing. It doesn't matter what the role is. Doesn't matter what kind of movie it is. I don't think it matters what he's getting paid. Like, this dude goes for it. Capital G, capital F, capital I. And he's very much doing it here. To the point where, like, there are stretches of this movie, and again, for those who are unfamiliar, Tom Hardy plays Eddie Brock, who has been infected by an alien symbiote named Venom, which gives him superpowers. They go out and fight bad guys, usually by biting their heads off and eating their brains. It's a whole thing. But we also are introduced to another symbiote character who comes about through a convoluted set of circumstances I'm not going to go into. The character's name is Cletus Cassidy, played by Woody Harrelson, who is also notorious for going for it. And so you put those two guys together, there's a lot of fun to be had. What I need to say about this is the best parts of this movie are when it's just Tom Hardy, like, talking to air. Like, it's all CGI stuff.
Right.
And it's just, like, this weird odd couple vibe that is kind of hilarious and also deeply unsettling. And his commitment to the bit is so thorough that you really just kind of get swept up into it. And you know, it's one of those things where it's a perfect marriage of filmmaker and film. The director, Andy Serkis.
I didn't know that.
Mocap legend. He is someone who probably more than anyone is capable of understanding both the necessities of franchise filmmaking. Like, this is a guy, he was Gollum in the Lord of the Rings movies. He was Caesar in the Planet of the Apes movies. He's been in the MCU. Plus, he has a real grasp of what it means to act with CGI.
Yeah.
And so you bring those two things together, and he's a perfect fit for this. The movie is really fun. There are a lot of really ridiculous jokes. Again, the one thing that kept coming back to me was, you probably remember this. Do you remember it's sort of a minor classic to my mind, the Steve Martin, Lily Tomlin movie, All of Me?
Yes.
Like, that's the vibe you get because Venom is inside him and always talking to him. And so, like, you get those conversations that are one-sided to the outside, and it's like, again, I'm not going to say it's a great movie because it's not. However, I cannot deny Venom, Let There Be Carnage, super fun time.
Awesome. All right, there you go. Four to choose from Alan this week on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll see you on Wednesday.
Yes, sir.